Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamed Bet, Amud Bet, by the last Mishnah. Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, ein mavrin alav et atchum, ve'ein mefachim alav et agal, lo olim bi'ilan, ve'lo rochvim al gabei behema, ve'lo shatin al pnei amayim, ve'ein chotchim oto ben bedavar shuhu mishum shvut, ben bedavar shushum lo tase. So now, in order to facilitate the ability to blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, one is not allowed to violate Isurei Durabanan or Shvut Durabanan. So here you have a list of items that are Asurim Durabanan. One of them is going outside of the Tchum. The next one is clearing off a pile of stones, going up the tree, riding on an animal, floating on the water, swimming, or cutting it. Now here, with cutting it, it mentions two items. It mentions cutting it with something that's an Isurei Durabanan, and then cutting it with something that's an Isur d'Oraita. Obviously, if you can't cut with an Isur d'Rabbanan, you can't cut with an Isur d'Oraita, the Gemara will ask that question. But here, the Mishnah is unequivocal that you can't violate the Isurei d'Rabbanan in order to facilitate the blowing of the shofar. Aval, im ratza liten letocho mayim o yayin, one wants to put water or wine inside of it in order to clear it out or to make it sound clearer, that is permissible, and we don't say that's mitaken kli. That's the equivalent of fixing the instrument that we don't say. Ein makvim et tinokot militkoach. We don't stop the young children from blowing. U mitaskim imahem ad shilamdu. And we even actually engage with them until they learn how to blow the shofar. Va mitasek lo yatsa. Person who's mitasek, who is playing around, is not yotze. And a person who is hearing from a person who's playing around is not Yotze. Now this is Ben the Rova, Ben the Rabbi Zeira that we learned before about mitzvot tzrichot kavanah. According to Rabbi Zeira, according to Rova, mitzvot ain't tzrichot kavanah. They both agreed that there is a minimum standard, which is that if you are just playing around with the shofar and something comes out, that is not called a kol. Rova was only matir if you were blowing it for a shear, and then you're Yotze with the tkiah because you wanted to create a tkiah. It just wasn't tkiah mitzvah. A mitzvah dein tzrichot kavanah. But he agreed, if you're mitaseik, that you're not Yotze with the shofar. So this is a minimum standard that's agreed to by everyone, that at least to be Yotze the shofar, mitaseik is not sufficient to get you there. Now, Mar says, my time up. What is the reason that you're not allowed to violate anything to bring the shofar? Is it the mitzvah of shofar and mitzvah taseh? And generally we say that if you have to do a mitzvah taseh, that aseh doche, lo taseh. The Gemara says, shofar asehu. Shofar is a mitzvah taseh, but yom tov as aseh vilo taseh. Yom tov involves both. An aseh and a lo taseh. Vein aseh doche, lo taseh v'aseh. That a aseh can be doche, a single lo taseh, as long as it's a regular lo taseh. But here, where you have an aseh and a lo taseh, that strengthens Yom Tov. The Yom Tov involves two parts to it. There's an assay to keep Yom Tov, and there's a lot to say not to violate Yom Tov. So together they create a much stronger package. Discussed this in the past, that what the means over here, that why is an assay not doche, an assay and a lot assay? Is it because the assay is doche, the lot assay, but then you're still left with the assay afterwards, so that's why you can't do it? Or do we say that the assay and lot assay tells you that the assay is a stronger lot assay? When you have an assay and a lot assay together, it means that the lot assay must be a stronger lot assay, and therefore your assay cannot be doche, that lot assay. So those are two different ways that Tosafot formulates it. In Neshas, obviously the nafkamina will be whether the lot assay is left. If you go ahead and violate Yom Tov in order to blow the shofar, was it assay doche lot assay and you're only in violation of the assay of Yom Tov, or no? Since the assay cannot overcome the lot assay over here, therefore, you're in violation of the lot assay because the assay is just not strong enough to overcome it, and that's an afkamina between those two shitot in Tosafot. Lo olim bi'ilan v'lo rochvim al gabei behema. Hashto the rabbonon amart lo. Here you said that something that's the rabbonon no d'oraita mi ba'i. You have to ask him about a din d'oraita. I mean, why do you have to mention it? Marseh zuv ein zarech lomar zuk tani. It writes in a literary style, which means not only this but also this. So not only Isurei d'Rabbanan, but also Isurei d'Oraita, even though Isurei d'Oraita are more obvious. Now, that's the Pashtut way to read this Gemara, that the Mishnah lists over here a whole series of things that are Asur mid'Rabbanan, and then it lists you something that's Asur mid'Oraita. So why does it leave the d'Oraita to last? So this is, the Gemara says, literary style of zu in tzarech lomar zu. Not only this, but this as well. Rashi says here, this is about the list of Isurei Derabbanan that are listed in our Mishnah. There are two types of Isurei Derabbanan that exist. There are some Isurei Derabbanan that exist because they're coming to prevent you from engaging in an Isur De'oraita. We don't want you to do this because this will lead to an Isur De'oraita. Right, it's a Sayag, it's a fence of sorts. Other Isurei Derabbanan have more broader context. We don't want you doing this because this will take away from the spirit of Shabbat. This will take away from the nature of Shabbat. So if you look at the list of Isurei Derabbanan here, the first series were Marvim et Atchum, Mefrachim et Agal. So those two items, as Rashi says, are items that are Isurei Derabbanan, but they're not there to prevent an Isur De'oraita. They're simply there to create an atmosphere of Shabbat. Whereas when you move on from there, you have lo olim bi'ilan, lo rochvim agabi be'ema. Both of those are restrictions so you don't snap a branch off the tree, which would be an Isur De'oraita. So he says, that's what the Gemara is speaking about here. When it says derabanan and De'oraita, it means, why did they mention Isurei Derabbanan that are just plain Derabbanans? Then why afterwards do you mention Isurei Derabbanan that lead to a De'oraita or protect you from a De'oraita? It should have been the other way around. You should have first listed the Isurei Derabbanan that protecting you from violating an Isur De'oraita, and then write those that are just Isurei Derabbanan. So he says, lo zu af zu. That's the way Rashi explains it. And in the end he writes, I'm not sure if that's the right explanation. And he says, I'm not sure if this girsa should be here whatsoever. He says, I don't know if the whole Gemara needs to be here at all. It's obvious that the Mishnah writes this way and sometimes, and that it's just a literary style. And he's not sure that the girsa should be here whatsoever. Right, next. Mishnah says you can't cut the shofar down to size or to fix it so that you can utilize it, whether it's something that is asur midrabanan, whether it's something asur midoraita. So what's asur midrabanan? What's asur midoraita? Mishum shvut, maglo, lotase sakina. So the kirsa that we have is, for shvut, that is a maglo. If you take a sickle side that's used for cutting grain, and then you use that to cut the shofar, even though it's effective, it's still not the normal way that you would cut the shofar, and therefore it's only asur midrabanan. Whereas sakina, if you do with a knife, that's the normal way to cut the shofar. So if you engage with doing the knife, then you violated a lotase. So now the Gemara asks the same question again, is hashta mishum shvut amart lo. Here you said that you can't do it even with an Isur Derabbanan. Lotase mi boy. Here you have to ask about a din d'oraita. Zu ben tzarach lamor zu ktani. So again, it's that literary style of the Mishnah. This is what drives Rashi's interpretation in the previous sequence, because there's only one Isur Doraita mentioned in our Mishnah, and that is cutting the shofar velotase. So that means that the previous statement in the Gemara was obviously referencing the items before that in the Mishnah, which are all Isurei Derabbanan. That's why Rashi said, well, the explanation has to be that we're talking about two different types of Derabbanans, and that's the explanation of the previous statement of the Gemara. So that's where Rashi says, I don't think the Girsa belongs here at all, because we're going to address the issue of Derabbanan and Doraita in the next sequence here in the Gemara. That's the way that our Gemara reads. The Rabbeinu Chananel says, "Ein chotukim et ha-shofar b'dvar shu mishum shvut, kagon, masar, o sakina." He says that a shvut is a saw or a knife. But kosher came et dvar shu mishum lotase, kagon magal, shu asua de katzer. That's made to cut. So the Rabbeinu Chananel learns the exact opposite of what we have in our Gemara, that the magal is the doraita, and the sakina is the derabanan. It might be that the difference here is where you're cutting the shofar. I mean that it might be that cutting of the shofar here is a separated or independent shofar. And when Rashi is explaining that you're cutting it down to size to be make it useful. Whereas when the Rabbeinu Chananel is speaking about it, he's speaking about detaching it from the animal. And therefore a magal is the tool that you use for detaching or for tzira. And that's why it's the proper tool, quote unquote, here. Whereas the knife and the masar, which seem to be the more proper tools, aren't used when you're separating it from the animal. So that might be the difference in their opinions, that the Rabbeinu Chananel is focused on removing it from the animal, whereas Rashi is focused on cutting it down to size. All right, now, avalim ratza litain the tocho maimo yayin itain. Maimo yayim in, meraglayim lo. You can put in water or wine, but you cannot put in urine. Very common in their day was an acid that was used for cleaning. They used it in a lot of detergents. Urine was a integral part of the ingredients, usually. Every day you say it in the Pitom HaKtoret, that alo miraglaim finla, ele sheim makdisim raglaim mipnei hakavod, and that's what the Gemara says here again. Matnit and mani, abashol hi, titania, abashol omer, maimu yain mutar kdele tzach tzachol. Water and wine are good to clean it out, to make it smoother. Eragai masur mipnei ha-kavod. Urine you can't use, even though it's effective, you can't use it because it's not proper kavod. Same way that we say it by the Pitom HaKtoret, that eragai are not utilized because even though they're effective, it's just not proper kavod. It's not proper etiquette to bring it into the mikdash or into a place that you're doing a mitzvah. Right? You don't stop the children from blowing. Ha? Nashim akvin. But if it was women who were blowing, we would stop them. We don't stop women or children from blowing on Yom Tov. The difference in opinion between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya. Deber el Bnei Yisrael. Deber el Bnei Yisrael is the header of many parashiyot. But here, Deber el Bnei Yisrael, by the parashiyot HaKarbonot, there it goes on to explain about this smicha, b'samach yodo, that you do smicha. So here, Bnei Yisrael sumchim, vein benot Yisrael sumchot divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda believes that Bnei Yisrael is a miut to say that only zecharim, only men are sumach on their animals, but there's benot Yisrael are not sumchot divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Amrim, Nashim Somchot Rishut. You're right that they're not obligated to do smicha, but they have the right to do it, and they have the right to go ahead and do smicha. So they can opt in to doing smicha here. So what's the problem here of Nashim blowing the shofar? So Rashi says something amazing. He says, Ha Nashim Akvin, we stop women from blowing shofar. The Peturot the Gamre. They are Peturot, because it's a mitzvah to say, Shazman Grama, and therefore, they are Petur. V'chi Takei, and when they blow it, Ika Bal Tosif, is a problem of Bal Tosif. That's a strange utilization of Bal Tosif. Bal Tosif is usually when you're engaged in a mitzvah that you're obligated in, and then you add on some feature to that mitzvah. Five parashiyot and tefillin, 9 strings, or 10 strings on the tzitzit, things that extend an existing mitzvah that you're obligated in. To engage in a mitzvah that you're not obligated in, nobody calls that Baal Tosif. But even if you say you can't opt in, it shouldn't be a category of Baal Tosif. Right, but that's only in context. Remember, you have to have either, it has to be right after Sukkot, but even according to Rav, who says mitzvah ain't tzrichot kavana, there you have to have kavana to do the mitzvah outside of the time period when you're supposed to do it. Here she's doing it in a period where people are chayav, it's a proper time to do it. She just happens to be patur. Right? That's if you go and sit in the sukkah when you were patur from sitting in the sukkah. They're going to say that that's Baal Tosif? No. That's the case there. You're trying to sit in a sukkah when it's not a time for the sukkah. Rashi in Eruvin, if you look at Rashi in Eruvin, there's a little letter there that makes all the difference, and it says, Kibal Tosif. He has a kafa dimyon there, which is that it looks like Baal Tosif. It looks like someone's engaging in a mitzvah that is unnecessary or extends beyond what they need. Meaning that this is a takanat chachamim that says don't engage in the mitzvah. Even though they're entitled to engage in the mitzvah, don't do it because it looks like Baal Tosif. So that is a much easier way to read it. Our Rashi over here does not have that kafa dimyon, which makes Rashi very difficult to read. Now, as far as Tosafot is concerned, women are able to opt in, which is even though our Stam Mishnah here follows Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, which is that Tinokot, we don't stop, but women we do stop, which means that it's like Rabbi Yehuda, our Stam Mishnah here. Nevertheless, we paskin like Rabbi Yossi because Tamo Benimiko Imo. Because in general, he's considered to be very thoughtful, and his understanding and his explanations of his opinions are very good and clear, and therefore, we paskin like him. So he says, we have another situation. She quotes the Gemara from Erevin, where Michal Bat Shaul was putting on tefillin, the wife of Yonah was doing Aliyah the Regel, where women were opting in to mitzvot asay. Right? We dealt in Sukkah with the issues of which mitzvot asay they can opt into, why there's objection to tefillin, We dealt with that already in Sukkah. But he says we have examples of women opting in. So now we have examples in the Gemara of women opting in, plus we have Rabbi Yossi supporting that position that women can opt in. So the fact that they can opt in shows you that they're allowed to do it. Now, one of his examples is that a suma. By a suma, we also say that Rav Yosef, who was a suma, in the Gemara in Kedushin, goes through different stages. Originally, he says, anybody who comes and tells me that a suma is patur min a mitzvot, I'll give them, I'll throw a party for them, because then I'm patur from the mitzvah and I'm still doing it. So I'm great, opting in, even though I'm not obligated in it. So therefore, you see that you can opt into a mitzvah, even when you are patur min a mitzvah. But then afterwards, he switches his mind and he finds out that Gadola mitzuveh yoter mishenu mitzuveh, and therefore he says, I'll throw a party for anybody who says that a suma is chayav in a mitzvot. But in the first stage, you see, Rabbi Yosef believes that even when you're patur, you can opt into the mitzvah. So that is muskam lakol, that Tosafot brings over here, and that's muskam, according to everyone, in the end, that we pass in this way, that women are allowed to opt into mitzvot that they are durot from. The question then becomes, when they do opt into a mitzvah, can they make a bracha on that mitzvah? What's the problem with making a bracha on the mitzvah? It says, Asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu, that you commanded us. Now the Gemara in Shabbat, the Gemara in Sukkah asked, what do you mean? We make brachot like that on mitzvot derabanan. So heichan zivanu, where do we have vitzivanu? So the Gemara says, there's an issue of lotasur. By a mitzvah derabanan, you have a mitzvah to lishma the chachamim. So therefore, that's why it's Asher kiddishanu mitzvotav vitzivanu. A woman who is opting in here doesn't have that. She has the option to move in, but she's not commanded to do the mitzvah, and that's not even midrabanan she commanded to do the mitzvah. So why can she make a bracha? So that happens to be a machloket harishonim, whether women are entitled to make a bracha on a mitzvah to say shazran grama. The promoter of the opinion that they are allowed to make a bracha is the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam is quoted over here, he's quoted in Eruvin, almost every place that this comes up. Tosafot deals with this, Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam brings his first proof from a suma, from Rav Yosef. We know that Rav Yosef says, I want to know who tells me that suma is patur min a mitzvot, because then I'll be doing them voluntarily, and I'll getting more schar. Now, if Rav Yosef, when he volunteered and opted into the mitzvah, could not make a bracha, then why would he say, I want to find someone who can tell me that I'm patur min a mitzvot? That means that he's going to lose out on every bracha they could ever make by any of the mitzvot. Because now he's patur min a mitzvot, and if he opts in voluntarily, he won't be able to make a bracha. She says, first of all, it must be that he can make a bracha. Number two is, we know that Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshet led their seders. They led the seder, and they were motzi, the people at the seder. That means that Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshet, who are sumot, both led a seder, and were motzi other people that are there. Well, they can't be motzi other people if they can't make the brachot that are associated with the seder. So based on that, Rabbeinu Tam says, you see from here that a suma is patur min a mitzvot, is allowed to make a bracha, and we don't worry about this, asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav vitzivanu. Vitzivanu is a more general terminology here of vitzivanu, that we're commanded to do it. Even though I have a technicality that lets me out, we're still commanded to do these mitzvot, and when I opt in, I can still say vitzivanu. That's Rabbeinu Tam's proof. Then, Tosafot, in all these cases, backs out and says, v'yesh l'chalek. We can differentiate between a suma and an isha. By a suma, even if a suma is patur min a mitzvot midoraita, he is obligated midrabanan. The rabanan said that a suma, even though he's patur min a mitzvot, is chayav in mitzvot. Whereas women who are patur min a mitzvot, there is no mitzvah derabanan to opt in or to do the mitzvah. So he says, why would they do that? Why would they differentiate between them? So he says, because if the rabanan did not institute a chiyu midrabanan for a suma, he would have no mitzvot whatsoever. He'd basically be a goy. He has nothing that defines him as being Jewish because he's patur across the board from mitzvot. So by obligating midrabanan, that gives him some character that makes him part of the Jewish nation because of the mitzvot derabanan. By nisha, even if she's patur in a mitzvot, that's only mitzvot to say she has ruman grama. She's still chayav in other mitzvot. So that means that she has other things that define her as being Jewish, therefore the Rabbanan didn't have to come in and say, she's chayevet midrabanan in these mitzvot. And that's why you would differentiate between the two of them. In addition, you could argue that a woman is similar to a katan. A katan is allowed to make brachot, even though he's patur. So why can't a woman make brachot when she is ptura? So there, Tosafot again says, v'yesh l'chalek, because A child, we have a mitzvah of chinuch, because he is mimin bar chayuva. He eventually will be a person who is chayav in these mitzvot, and therefore there makes sense that the Rabbanan instituted that he makes brachot. A woman will never be chayavet in these mitzvot, so therefore there's no institution. So Tosfot in the end knocks down a lot of these proofs of the Rabbeinu Tam, but we're left with the one proof, which is the fact that the Gemara in Erevin says that Michal Bat Shaul put on a tefillin, the wife of Yonah did Aliyah the Regel, and the assumption there is that they carried out the mitzvot in their full force. The Gemara never says, oh, they didn't make a bracha, they didn't do it. It seems to me that they did the mitzvah. Whether the Gemara agrees with what they did or not is separate. There the Gemara has opinions about whether what they did was correct or not, but the Gemara never says they didn't make a bracha. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam believes that women make a bracha when they opt into a mitzvah, and that is the way that the Ramah paskins, that's the minog Ashkenaz, is that Ashkenazi women who opt into a mitzvah make a bracha on the mitzvah. On the other hand, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, like the Rishonim that believe that mitzvah aseshe zrang Ramah, that women opt into, they do not make a bracha on it. And therefore, the Sephardi women do not make a bracha on mitzvah to say that they opt into, whether it's lulav, shofar, even sfirat ha'omer, if they count, they don't make a bracha. And Rav Avadya Yosef even talks about tefillah, possibly things like psukat zimra, and even birkat kriyat shema, whether women can make those brachot, because they might be tied to mitzvah to say shazman grama, they are bounded by the time when you can daven. And if they opt in, can they make the brachot or not make the brachot? So Rabbi Yosef has a long tshuva about this issue for the Sephardi women and differentiating the Sephardi girls in schools, not making them do what the Ashkenazi and the girls do, which is making brachot when they opt in to these mitzvot. But that is a major difference halakhically between Ashkenazim and Sephardim when women opt into mitzvot. All right, so now the Gemara continues. You're allowed to help them play around until they learn how to blow the shofar. Amar Rabbi Elazar, afilu b'Shabbat. This is even on Shabbat. You're allowed to do this with them. So here from the Gemara, it sounds like it's Shabbat Rosh Hashanah. From the Poskim later on, it sounds like this is the Shabbat before Rosh Hashanah, not necessarily Shabbat Rosh Hashanah itself, that we permit you to do this. So Tanya Namiochi, we have a brayta like this. Mit askim ben ad shilamdu. You're allowed to play around with them until they learn. Afilu b'Shabbat, even if it's Shabbat. Ve'ein ma'akvim atinokot when it's called b'Shabbat. We don't stop them from blowing on Shabbat. Ve'ein tzarech lamar b'yom tov. And of course, if you allow it on Shabbat, then you don't have to say on Yom Tov that we allow it. Mar says, ha kufa kasho. You have an internal stereo. Amar mit askim ben ad shilamdu. Afilu b'Shabbat, that you're allowed to play around with them and even on Shabbat. Alma b'chatchila amrinun taku. We say, go ahead, blow. V'hadar tana ein makvin. We don't stop them. Ikuvu d'lo makvin. We don't stop them. Halachatchila. We don't encourage them. Lo amrinun taku. Then we don't say to them, go and do this. Lokasho. So here we have not a question. Kan b'katan shigia lechinuch. Kan b'katan shelo igia lechinuch. Depends on the age of the katan. Is the katan below the age of chinuch or above the age of chinuch? Which is which? Rashi says, katan shigia lechinuch mitaskim behem shilamdu. Then you actively engage with them when they are higigia lechinuch. Then you can say to them, blow, go ahead. Let's encourage them to do it. But katan shelo higia lechinuch, by a katan that's not higia lechinuch, then you don't stop them, but you don't encourage them. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Tosafot on the bottom of the previous amud says just the opposite. He says that's the other way around. Nearly ipcho. The katan shigia lechinuch ein makvin. If he's already reached the age of chinuch, then we don't stop him, but we don't encourage him. On the other hand, if he is below the age of chinuch, where he's not subject to the isur derabanan of klei shir on Shabbat, there we even encourage them to play around with it because you're not in violation of any isur on Shabbat. Lo halacha, that's what happens, exactly what happens here between Rashi and Tosafot, goes throughout the poskim, and therefore ends up in halacha that there's a tension in halacha as to which type of katan are we speaking about here. Definitely ein makvin by all katanim. So we could definitely say that. Question of encouraging the katanim, it's not clear whether it's shegiel lechinuch or shlo gegiel lechinuch, and that is machloket poskim that's brought down by the Ramah discussing exactly this issue. What type of katan are we speaking about in this reference? Now, what's also important here now reflects back on the Nashim. Before, when we said that the Nashim, we talked about the Machloket, whether they can opt into doing smicha, are they allowed to do smicha or not. Also over here with Tkiat Shofar, whether they can blow the Shofar, play around the Shofar. In both of these cases, there is a mitigating factor, which is that there's another Isur involved. Blowing the Shofar is an issue of Metakin Kli Shir, that there's an Isur Derabanan to blow the Shofar. So when you opt into the mitzvah, you're going up against an issue of an Isur Derabanan. Because the Rabbanan said, don't blow these on Yom Tov, don't blow these on Shabbat. Okay, there's a dispensation when you're blowing for the mitzvah. But outside the context of the mitzvah, then there is no dispensation. For Ketanim, we say, okay, for Chinuch, or for whatever, we let them do it. But Nashim, maybe that's a mitigating factor over here. And that's why the Chachamim said, don't do it. Because the Chachamim, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, say don't do it here, even though maybe it's not Baal Tosif, even though maybe it's not a problem of opting into a mitzvah, but in this specific case, when you opt into the mitzvah, you also have a mitigating factor of an Isur Derabanan. And we say don't opt in when there's an Isur Derabanan there. And the same might be true over here by Smicha. By Smicha, one of the problems is that you're not allowed to be Mishtamish B'Kodoshim, not allowed to utilize Kodoshim for your own benefit, or in addition, you're not allowed to do work with the animals on Yom Tov or Shabbat. So if a woman wants to do smicha, we know that you have to do, at least according to one opinion, smicha b'chol kochol. You have to lean your entire weight of your body onto the animal with your hands, which would again be either mishtamish b'kodoshim or a problem of utilizing an animal on Shabbat or Yom Tov. There will be Yom Tov, not Shabbat. Therefore, there's an Isur D'Rabbanan. Again, a mitigating factor which says, don't opt in because you're going up against an Isur Derabanan. So it might be that the examples that we're bringing here where we say that women shouldn't engage, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, are cases where there's an Isur Derabanan on the other side. And we're saying don't opt in and get involved with the Isur Derabanan. And then Rabbanan upheld their Isur in that case where the women wanted to opt in. And that's why Rashi says it's Nirek about Tosi. All those things that we were saying before is because you have these mitigating factors of the Isur Derabanan. All right, next. Vamita say klo yatsa. Someone who plays around with it is not yotze. Ha tokei l'shir. If you play it for musical instrument, yatsa. Lema misaile l'rova. This supports Rava's position, which is Rava Rava tokei l'shir yatsa because mitzvot ein tzrichot kavana. So mazera dilma tokei l'shir nami mitasei karile. So maybe blowing for a shir is called mitasei. I mean, it depends where you draw the line. For Rava, the line is below. Tokei l'shir is not considered to be mitasek anymore. That's already considered to be blowing the shofar. Whereas for Rabbi Zeira, blowing for shir might be the equivalent of mitasek. That's called playing around because you're not blowing for a mitzvah. So therefore, the definition of mitasek is flexible depending on where you think the threshold is, where the mitzvah is and where the mitzvah is not. So you could just argue that the mitasek in our mission includes blowing it for musical reasons. Someone who hears from someone who's just playing around is not yotzei. The deal from this would be that someone who hears from someone who's blowing for their own purposes. They're blowing for themselves. Have nothing to do with you. Don't even have you in mind. But, my, what would be the din? Yatsa. According to our Mishnah, the only problem is that he was mitasei. That's why you can't be yotzei with his tekiah. But if he was really blowing for a mitzvah, even though it's not your mitzvah, that would be sufficient. Leimatavi to Yufte the Rabbi Zeira. That's against Rabbi Zeira's position, who said you need kavanat shomea and kavanat mashmia. You have to have in mind for the person that you're blowing for. Damale Rabbi Zeira the shamei kavin v'tokali. Have me in mind and blow for me. So Gemara says Dilma Aidi the Tanereisha mitasek Tani Seif and Nami mitasek. Maybe it's just a literary parallel structure, which is mitasek is dafka in the Reisha. But in the Seifa, mitasek is not dafka. It's lav dafka mitasek. It might be, even if it was blowing not for you in mind, you'd also not be yotze. But it just kept the parallel structure in the Mishnah. But it doesn't mean to say that when you're mitasek, you can't be motzi someone else. But if you're blowing for a mitzvah, you can motzi them even if you don't have them in mind. Don't make that deal because maybe the mitasek in the Seifa is not dafka, but rather lav dafka is only there because of the literary style. Okay, next Mishnah. Seder Tkiot. The structure of the Tkiot of the day. Shalosh, shel shalosh, shalosh. It's 3 times 3, which is, you have a Tkiah, which is a smooth sound, a Truah, which is a broken sound, and then a Tkiah, which is a smooth sound. So you have to blow 3 sets of Tkiah, Truah, Tkiah. Now Truah, when I use the word Truah here, I mean Truah min haTorah. Not what we call Truah today, but Truah just means a broken sound. to blow a smooth sound, broken sound, smooth sound, and you have to do that 3 times. That's the mitzvah bina Torah for blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. I mean, you only need 9 sounds bina Torah to be yotzei the mitzvah bina Torah. We'll see over today, the end of today's daf and of tomorrow's daf, why that expanded. But for right now, that is the basic mitzvah. Shir tkiyah kishlosh truot. The shir, how long is a tkiyah? It is the length of 3 truot. Shir truah kishlosh yivavot. And a shir of a truah is the equivalent of 3 yibavot. There's a machloket aposkim here as to what shalosh yibavot is. Our shalosh yibavot, as Rashi translates them over here, shlosh kolot ba'alma koshil. Just any 3 little noises that you make, which would be a very short length. Or the Tosafot over here brings down that it might be shalosh kochot. Shalosh kochot, which would be more extensive sounds, which would be the equivalent of 9 of the things that Rashi is saying. So Rashi is saying that what the Shulchan Aruch and others called tarmutim, which are these very small sounds. The question here is, do you need 3 small sounds, which is what Rashi seems to think, 3 tarmutim? Or do you need 9 tarmutim, which is you need shlosh yibavot, which is shlosh kochot, 3 sounds, and each sound is made up of these little 3 kochot, so you need 9 of those tarmutim. And that is a machloket halacha. Halacha, we have a machloket as to whether the shir of the truah is these 3 tarmutim, 3 little sounds, or is it the 9 little sounds. Now I'm not talking about how many sounds you have to make for a truah, I'm talking about the length of the truah. Is it the equivalent of 3 little sounds, or is it the equivalent of 9 little sounds? That's the question of the length of the truah. And that is a machloket. The Shulchan Aruch Lalocha in Taf Kuf Tzadi brings both dayot down. He says, yesh omrim, that it's this length, v'yesh omrim, that it's that length. Now we're going to see in the Gemara, and everybody agrees, that the tkiyah, the smooth sound that you blow before the truah, the broken sound, has to be the same length as the truah. So whatever the size of the truah is, the tkiyah that accompanies it has to be that same length, at least that same length, in a smooth sound. So when you go tkiyah, truah, tkiyah, the tkiyah before and after will adjust to the size of the truah in between. Okay, this will become important in a second when we start to describe the other types of sounds or the sounds that we make. We'll come back to this and discuss exactly this structure of length. Tkiyah b'rishona, umashach b'shniyah kishtayim. He blew the tkiyah beforehand. And then when he blew the tkiyah afterwards, he blew it long enough to incorporate 2. Ein biyado ela achat. He only has 1. Meaning that doesn't count as 2 tkiyot. Just because you made it as long as what 2 tkiyot should be, it doesn't make it into 2 tkiyot. We already saw this earlier in the Gemara, and Rashi quotes that from the Gemara, which is, you have to stop. If you don't stop, it's 1 tkiyah and not 2 tkiyot. Mi shibeirach v'achar kach nitmano lo shofar. One who did the brachot. Birech here doesn't mean the bracha on the shofar, but birech here means that you davened and you didn't have a shofar, and then you get a shofar later. Tokeo Maria Tokeo shalosh pamim. You blow 3 times the 3 series that you need. What's the question? Why shouldn't he blow the shofar? You're asking because the ikar shofar is to be blown together with the brachot. And so therefore he's lost the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to blow the shofar, machiyot, zichronot, shofarot, within the Shmoneh Esrei or within the Chazaret HaShatz. That's the ikar shofar. Blowing it out of that context, does that have any value? The Mishnah says, yes, it does have value. That there's an independent mitzvah to hear the shofar, even when it's not connected to the brachot. Right, that will become more controversial. We'll discuss that maybe in tomorrow's stuff. There's a massive Tosafot here that touches on a number of issues. One of the issues he touches on is our practice of how we blow shofar, and maybe we'll deal with that tomorrow, is why do we blow the shofar before we start Shmoneh Esrei, right? If the Ikar Tkiyot are the ones that are supposed to be in Shmoneh Esrei, so why do we blow beforehand? So that is in Machloket HaRishonim as to why we blow beforehand. Kishem Shishliach Tzibor Chayav, Kach Kol Yachid V'Yachid Chayav. Just like the Shliach Tzibor is Chayav, so too each individual is Chayav. Rabban Gamliel Omer, Shliach Tzibor Motziat Rabim Yidei Chubotan. Rabban Gamliel says, no, the Shliach Tzibor takes care of everybody. This is a general machloket with regards to Shmoneh Esrei. Does each person daven their own Shmoneh Esrei? And then the Shliach Tzibor is Motzi those that don't know how to do it? Or does the Shliach Tzibor be Motzi everybody? Whether you're a Bakir or not, nobody davens privately. So that's the question here. It's a bigger Shaila outside of Rosh Hashanah, but here we have the Masei Machloket by the Shmoneh Esrei of Rosh Hashanah. Whether you daven separately as a yachid and then a tzibur, or you just daven as a tzibur and that's it, that's sufficient. Right now, Vatanyo, don't we have a bright this year tkiyah kitrua, that the tkiyah has to equal a trua? So Rabbi, Tanadidon kochoshiv tkiyah de kulu bave. Our Tanos is talking about all the tkiyot, uchruot de kulu bave, and he's adding up all the truot. Tanabara kochoshiv chad bava betulo. The bright is only counting one to one. So our bright that says a tkiyah is kitrua, that means that the tkiyah equals whatever trua is in the middle. That's pretty straightforward. Our Mishnah that says tkiyah kishlosh truot means that the three tkiyot that you're going to blow here in the series, because you're going to blow a tkiyah for each trua, those three tkiyot equal the three truot that are in the middle. So he just sums the entirety of the series and says, well, you have three tkiyot in the beginning and three truot. So those tkiyot together are equal to the three truot that are in the middle, which is the equivalent of saying what the brayta says, which is tkiyah equals trua. And again, that is the halacha that your tkiyah has to be as long as the trua that you blow in between. Shir trua ki gimel yibavot. The shir of a trua is three yibavot. Vatanya, shir trua ki shalosha shvarim. That a trua is like three shvarim. Amar abayi baha vadei plivye. This, the brayta definitely argues with our Mishnah. Dichtiv, yom trua yelachem. Because the pasuk says yom trua yelachem. Umitargamina, and the targum of Yom Shua is Yom Yibava Yehelechon. Should be a day of Yibava. So what's a Yibava? So Tibi made the Sisra. It says by Sisra's mother. Actually, it doesn't say it by Sisra's mother. It says it in Shirat Devorah, describing Sisra's mother, which is Ba'ada Cholon Nishkafa. She's looking out of the window longingly, waiting for her son to come home from the battle. B'tiyabev Eim Sisra. And the mother of Sisra is Tiyabev. So what is Tiyabev over there? It obviously means that she is crying. Mar Savar Ginuche Ganach. One of them holds that, what does it mean to Yibava or Yabev? That means to Ginuche Ganach, which is to moan and groan. Mar Savar Yulule Yolil. That it's a much more staccato-like sound. That type of sound. And therefore, we're uncertain as to which one is the trua. Is the trua shvarim, or is the trua a trua? And there's a machlok between the Braita and our Mishnah about this. What's the nature of the yibava that we're talking about here, the trua that we are talking about here? So now at this point, we have two different sounds that are going to make up our structure of what a trua is. Either it's a shvarim, three sounds, or it's a trua. Now a trua is a staccato-like sound, and that's what we blow the nine sounds, quick sounds together, and that is the sound of the trua. What we call a trua is one of the options for a trua d'oraita. The other option for a trua d'oraita is shvarim, which are these three sounds, as mentioned by the Braita. The Rabbeinu Mechananel says, "Begimel shvarim heim benichuta." They're a little more relaxed. "Uma'at hefseg bentayim," and there's a small gap between them. So they're a more relaxed form of trua. The trua, which is a staccato sound of da 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 da. So the shvarim are going to be slightly longer versions of that, which is the hefsek between them. Different people read the Rabbeinu Hananel differently with regards to the shvarim. What type of sound is the shever? Is the shever a smooth sound? Which means that what I just described here, that the shever is just an elongated trua, which is, it means da, da, da level sound. Or is the shvarim a and that is the minhag of some people from Germany especially. They have the minhag that their shvarim go up and down. That it's not a smooth sound, but each shever has a movement in it. So there are many bali tkiyah that are makpid to do both throughout the series of shofarot. When we blow, they blow some shvarim the smooth or flat way, and they blow some of the shvarim the up and down way. So that's just a question about shvarim. Then in addition to that, we know that the shever is longer than the trua. If you believe that the trua is three tamutim, three little sounds, then the shvarim have to be at least more than three sounds, and according to most, mean nine. They have to be nine sound long, the equivalent of those nine tamutim. And each one of your shvarim will be three, or just under three tamutim. The problem that you have is that when I blow the trua, if I say your trua is three tamutim, then the tkiyah before the trua has to be three tamutim. If I move on then to the tkiyah shvarim tkiyah, and I blow a shever that is three tamutim long, that's going to equal my tkiyah that's together with the trua. Therefore, the poskim in Tosafot mentions over here, the shvarim that you blow have to be less than three tamutim long. Each shever, not all the shvarim together, but each little break sound should be less than three tamutim, so it doesn't look like a tiyah. Because if it gets too long, then one of the shvarim, if you go, then you're starting to make a tkiyah instead of a shever. So you have to be careful to keep your shvarim short. Not so short that they look like a truah, but not so long that they look like a tkiyah. But that's relative to the size of what you think a truah is. So if you think a truah is three tamutim, your shever can't reach three tamutim, because then it'll look like a tkiyah. Even if you make your tkiyah longer, you're only required, your basic tkiyah is only required to be three tamutim long. So once you make a shever, it's the equivalent of what a tkiyah would be. Now, what you're talking about is the second opinion that the Shulchan Aruch brings down, that a truah is really not three tamutim, but nine tamutim. So then if your truah is nine tamutim, then your tkiyah has to equate to that. So then your tkiyah is nine tamutim long, and then your requirement by a shever would be that it doesn't reach nine tamutim, which gives you a lot more space to work with in terms of the length of your shever. And again, your shvarim should be at minimum nine tamutim to go together in total. So our practice is to be choshesh for both of those shitot, which is that we blow a tkiyah that is 18 tamutim long. At least when we blow the shvarim truah. When we have a shvarim or a truah, we blow it at a minimum, for a truah, minimum of nine tamutim. And for a shvarim, a little over nine tamutim. So our tkiyot are longer, because of that we're choshesh for the opinion that it's nine tamutim long. But we're also choshesh for the opinion that it's three tamutim, and our shvarim are shorter than three tamutim. We try to keep the shvarim less than three tamutim. Each shever, not the total. The total of shvarim we do is nine tamutim, at least nine tamutim. But each shever itself has to be three tamutim. So we do that, usually end up doing four or five shvarim, even though optimally you should do three. By shvarim, it's not as fixed. The Mishnah Berurah says the chatchila you should try to blow those three sounds. So if you keep the three sounds very close to three tamutim, you need to get it close to nine in order to be a full truah. So you have to be careful to balance your tkiyot. What you can't do is make your shvarim more than three tamutim, and then make your tkiyot less than nine tamutim, because then you're getting neither opinion. Your shvarim are turning into tkiyot, and your tkiyot are not long enough to be the other opinion. So you have to be careful not to do that.
Is that the last one talking about is just the character of sound?
It would also impact the length, meaning that, because if you believe that it's shlosh yibavot, then the truah is a shorter sound. It would be the equivalent of three kochot, which are three little sounds. So your truah would have to, even though you're blowing nine, it would have to only equal those three sounds. Your nine sounds of your truah only have to equal this. Even though you blow nine of them, they only have to equal those three little sounds, according to one opinion. There are another opinion, which we brought in Tosafot, that says it has to be nine of those sounds. So then the truah really equals what the basic sounds are, which is and that would be the length of it, what a truah should be. And then a shever would be, if you think that it's all together, the three breaks, the has to be longer than that's what it'll have to be longer than. Or if you think it's nine sounds, then those three sounds will then equal up to nine. It's the total of the shvarim. It's not each shever. It's the total of all three shvarim together. We'll have to do that. Because of this, then your tkiyot, because they measure to your truot, so your tkiyah for truot will be shorter than your tkiyot for shvarim. The tkiyah for shvarim will be slightly longer, and your tkiyah for shvarim truah will be even longer. It'll actually turn out that according to the opinion that truah is three kochot, three tamutim, the difference between truah and shvarim will be more significant, because the truah will be a total of three tamutim. But then each shever will be at least two tamutim long. When you add that up, you have somewhere between six and nine tamutim long for your three shvarim. So the difference will be between three tamutim and like six or nine tamutim for the shvarim versus the truah. On the other hand, according to the opinion that says that the truah is nine tamutim long, then the nine tamutim will be the total of your truah. And then for the shvarim, each shever will be roughly around three tamutim, or maybe a drop more, to get to just above nine tamutim. And that means that your shvarim then will be a drop more than nine, and your truah is nine tamutim, and the difference in total length between them will be much less significant. And that's why today, in our practice, where we blow the longer ones, there is a less of a differentiation in the size of the tikiot between the Tashat and the Tarat. And as we'll discuss tomorrow, this will also impact the Tashrat, which is the Tkiyah Shvarim Truah Tkiyah. If you believe that the Truah is three Tarmutim, then you're going to blow for the Tkiyah associated with Tashrat, something around 12 tarmutim. Whereas if you believe that it's 9 tarmutim for the chua, then for your tashrat, you're going to blow a tkiah that is roughly around 18 or a drop more tarmutim. Now, the practice in general is to blow a tkiah, that standard that matches shvarim chua for all of them, but it's not necessary. By the chua and the shvarim, they can be shorter tkiot because they only have to match whatever the sound in between is. Right, that's in terms of length of the tkiot that are associated. That's taken up by Tosafot over here. Two other things that Tosafot mentions over here, which we'll deal with tomorrow because of Rabbi Abbo's statement, which we need to help us with this, is number one, why is it that we blow the shofar in tkiot miyushav? And why do we blow so many kolot if the requirement to write is only 9 kiot? That's one. Number two is, the practice is clear at the time of the Gonim that they blew the tkiot to Miyushav, and then afterwards, when it came to Shmon Esrei, this is how they blew. They came to Malchiot, and they blew Kiyah, Shvarim, Truah, Tkiyah. Came to Zichronot, then they blew Tkiyah, Shvarim, Kiyah. And then it came to Shofarot, and they blew Tkiyah, Truah, Tkiyah, and that was it. So they blow one series for each of the brachot, and each series is different through the brachot.
During Shmon Esrei?
During Shmon Esrei, they blow Tashrat for the first bracha, then they blow Tashat, and then Tarat. 10 kolot total, but 3 each time. It's Kiyah, Truah, Tkiyah each time. First time they blow a Tashrat, the second time they blow a Tashat, and the third time they blow a Tarat. That was it. So the Tosafot wants to know, what's going on here? Why are we doing that, and why is that okay? It's already in the time of the Gonim, and the Gonim are already trying to explain why we do this, and why this is the practice. Again, I'm going to leave this for tomorrow because it relates to Rabbi Abbo, who deals with the reason that we have a practice to blow a Shvarim Truah at all, and what is the issue of Shvarim Truah. So far, what we have right now is, we have a machlok between the Braita and the Mishnah as to whether a Truah is a staccato sound, or is it a slightly longer sound like a Shvarim. According to that, you'd have to blow both sounds in order to be Yotzei Doraita. You'd have to blow Tkiah, Shvarim, Tkiah, 3 times. You have to blow Tkiah, Truah, Tkiah 3 times because of it's a machloket. That assumes that it is a machloket. And I'm just saying these are all mentioned by this Tosafot today, but we're going to deal with that issue tomorrow. Right now, the Gemara says, Tarnu Banan, Minayin Shibish Shofar. How do you know that you have to blow with a shofar? Tamul Omar, Vavarta Shofar Truah. In the LOB Yovel. That's on the Yovel. Barash Hashanah Minayin. How do you know you have to blow with the shofar in Rosh Hashanah? The word shofar is never associated with Rosh Hashanah. It's associated with the Yovel. Tamad Lomar B'chodesh HaShvi'i. She'ein Tamad Lomar B'chodesh HaShvi'i. It doesn't need to tell you B'chodesh HaShvi'i because it already told you that it's Yom HaKippurim. We know that Yom Kippur is in the 7th month. So why is it telling me B'chodesh HaShvi'i? Ma Tamad Lomar B'chodesh HaShvi'i? Shuko Chu'ol Shuchodesh HaShvi'i Gzeh Kazeh. The teacher, there's a hekesh between all the blowings of the sounds, the truot, the tkiot, that are blown during the 7th month, that they're all similar. What does that mean? They're all similar? That they're all blown with a shofar. That's number one.
Also blown on Rosh Hashanah.
The word shua is mentioned by Rosh Hashanah, but it never tells you what the instrument to use is, and that we learn out of Yovel. That's what we're learning. How do you know that you blow a tkiah before? Tamil Omar, it says, V'avarta shofar shua. So there's havarta shofar, which means make the sound of the shofar, and then with truah afterwards. So the Gemara reads, havarta shofar means that there is a solid sound beforehand, and then a truah afterwards. Uminayin shepshuta le'acharah. How do you know that you have a smooth sound afterwards, a tkiah afterwards? Tamlomar ta'aviru shofar. So after the word truah, it also says ta'aviru shofar. So the word havara is mentioned both before the truah and after the truah, teaching us tkiah before, tkiah afterwards, truah in the middle. Vainly Elobiovel. Again, this din is written. Havarta Shofar and Taviru Shofar written by the Psukim and Pashat Bahar by the Yovel. How do you know it applies? Midrash Hashanah Minayin. Tamalomar Bechodesh Hashvi. Again, the Hekesh. Shein Tamalomar Bechodesh Hashvi. Umat Tamalomar Bechodesh Hashvi. Saying Chodesh Hashvi was unnecessary. Why does it say it? Shein Kol Shuot Chodesh Hashvi. Because the Hekesh that Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim of the Yovel have the same din, and therefore by Rosh Hashanah as well, you blow tkiah, truah, tkiah. Uminayin l'shalosh, shoshalosh, shalosh. How do you know that you have to blow 3 series? The word truah only appears once by the Yovel and appears twice by Rosh Hashanah. So how do you know how many you have to blow? Tamal omar vavata shofar truah, shabbaton, zichron truah, yom truah yelachem. So you have one time the truah, havata shofar truah, is mentioned by Yovel. twice by Rosh Hashanah, which is Zichron Shrua and Yom Shrua, one in Emor, one in Pinchas. How do you know that we're going to say that they're all equated, and therefore I have three Shruot that are required both in Rosh Hashanah and Yom HaKippurim, or the Ovel of Yom HaKippurim? Talmud Omar, Shvi, Shvi, L'Gzeira Shava. That's the more famous one, that seventh month, Shvi, Shvi, is L'Gzeira Shava. And the Gzeira Shava teaches me whatever is true by Yovel is true by Rosh Hashanah, whatever is true by Rosh Hashanah is also true by the Yovel. So, Keitzad, so what do you do? Shalosh, Shehein, Teisha. Three that are nine. I mean, three Truot that have a Tkiah before and Tkiah afterwards, which is a total of nine sounds that you have to make. Shir Tkiah Kitrua. The Shir of Tkiah is a Trua. That's the Brayta that we quoted before. That a Tkiah equals a Trua. Shir Trua Kishlosha Shvarim. Again, this is the Brayta that we quoted beforehand that argued on our Mishnah. Before we said, at least with regards to Shir Tkiah Kitrua, we can reconcile with our Mishnah and say our Mishnah agrees with that. But Shir Trua Kishlosha Shvarim, that argued our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that it's Shalosh Yibavot. And the Brayta says it's Shlosha Shvarim, which leads to this Machloket of whether it's Genuche Ganach or Yulule Yalil, and that's how we left it. All right, I'm going to stop here. This is the end of the Brayta. Now the Gemara is going to go back and discuss the Brayta that we just read.